Hello, beautiful alchemist. Welcome to Reiki Radio. I am your host, Yolanda, and we have another great conversation for you here today. I actually can't wait for you to hear this one. It was very interesting, and I really wished we had more time. But the beauty is the guest that we have also has their own podcast. They also are an author of a book that we will discuss. So you have plenty of ways to continue this conversation if you resonate with what is shared. So our guest today, his name is David Strickle, and he is a channel of source consciousness known as the Stream of David, and he is the developer of a transformative Taya practice. And this is the book. It's called The Taya Practice, which you can get on Amazon, and you will learn more about what this is in the conversation. And it points a lot to our creation consciousness, but how this is very much more about our energy, our frequency, our ways of perceiving, and how this affects our overall life experience, which is something that a lot of us question, talk about, and explore. So I hope that you really do enjoy this conversation with David. I also want to let you know that you can go to his website to learn more about his work at thestreamofdavid.com. And as I mentioned, he also has a podcast called The Stream of David, and it's available on all podcast platforms. And then lastly, of course, before we get into the conversation, don't forget that you can join me in San Diego in September for the Reiki Retreat Intensive. You can learn more on my website, theenergeticalchemist.com. I can't wait for you to hear the show, so I'm going to go now and just get into it. I will see you on the other side. Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Reiki Radio. We have a fantastic guest today, David Strickle, the author of The Taya Practice. And first, David, I just want to thank you for taking the time to have this conversation today and for writing this book.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for getting my book. I appreciate it.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate it. I was telling you before we began, I can't wait to finish the book. It really is so incredible, and I'm excited to have this conversation. One of the first things I just want to start off with, especially because of the name of the book, The Taya Practice. Could you share a little bit about what the Taya Practice is and what it stands for before we dive in deep?
Certainly. Taya is TYA, which stands for Trust Your Abundance. We really don't talk about Trust Your Abundance as much anymore. We've just sort of made Taya a word and we just refer to it as Taya. But if it's new for someone and it's new for a lot of people, we just call it the Taya practice. And the Taya practice really boils down to an active practice of appreciation of all things, which is essentially detuning your ego because your ego is naturally a discerner of preference. We're not going to eradicate our ego. We don't want to do that, but we have overdeveloped egos in our world. We all do. And when you detune your ego, you automatically allow more source consciousness to flow in. Source is abundance. And that means whatever you want to experience in life, the things that are your preferences flow to you, and just joy in being flows to you in that space. So that's
Yeah.
what it is. It gives you the tools to live this.
So it's interesting because, even hearing you describe that, I'm sure a lot of people right away their thoughts will go to potentially like law of attraction and these sorts of things. But I wanted to get into how this came about. And one of the reasons I think this will be interesting for everyone is because we all do have desires. I mean, we all do have things that we may dream about or experiences we wish we could have. And we have those contrasts to that as well of, well, why isn't this happening to me? Do I deserve these things? Is this impossible, right? And so a lot of people struggle with, do I even know how to manifest? Am I a good manifester? All of that. So I want to really pick your brain around this idea of creation and our relationship to it.
So to start, you mentioned law of attraction. I don't mention it much simply because I think Law of Attraction is a fantastic gateway into all of this conscious creation, energetic realm,
right,
and belief systems. So Law of Attraction for humanity did its job. The concept was around a long, long time ago. I understood conscious creation. I didn't know it was called conscious creation. I certainly didn't know Law of Attraction. In 1982, when I was 14 years old, I remember I grew up very poor. And I remember standing in a parking lot. My brother was buying this old used Oldsmobile, and we were poor. And he was scraping together money from cutting grass to buy this first crappy car. And people around us had money. And I told him, we're not going to be here forever. If we believe that we are like them, then we will become like them. I remember that. And my brother is 4 years older than me. He's very Christian to this day. And he looked at me like I was insane. And he still thinks I'm insane. He actually does what I do. He has books and podcasts and stuff, and very Christian, though. Yeah. So we're kind of ended up doing the same things and the same paths, but in very opposite ends of the spectrum. So Law of Attraction got people to think about, well, yes, I realize that I'm more positive in these areas and these areas work for me. I'm not as believing in those areas and they don't. And I see it even more in other people. And so we know that it's true, but Law of Attraction, if you just study Law of Attraction and stop there, it can be very, very frustrating. So, and it was for me, because I knew this when I was a kid. And then I read Think and Grow Rich somewhere in my 30s, made a lot of sense. And then, of course, The Secret came out in the early 2000s. And then everybody, Oprah's talking about it. She's still talking about it. Abraham really blew up during that time, if you're into Abraham Hicks. And it's all about, how do I manifest stuff mostly? And that's very appealing for all of us, because we all want to experience the things that we prefer in life, whatever that is.
Right.
How do we go about manifesting it? The big missing piece in Law of Attraction teachings for me was polarity. The fact that you're not going to just keep your vibe high all the time and manifest every single thing that you want. And why is that? I always joke that when that book came out, there was a movie that went with it, and there was a child that was imagining a red bicycle, and the red bicycle just appeared on the front lawn. Well, I thought, well, gosh, if the kid can do that with a bicycle, can't I manifest a Bentley convertible that way? Well, I still don't have my Bentley convertible. I have a 10-year-old Mercedes convertible that I love very much. I'm happy for it, but I don't have a Bentley convertible. And I don't even care whether I get one or not at this point, because of the spiritual journey I've been on. It'll show up when it shows up. If it does at all, who cares, right? But getting from that materialistic focus on Law of Attraction over here to realizing, wow, the material stuff is just window dressing. You know, that's just kind of the side note to everything that's available to us in this lifetime. And when you really start to understand your source nature, your soul, your higher self, however your inner being is, I think Abraham says inner being. When you start to realize what that's really all about, then life really gets interesting. Really, and I know we've had a conversation, so I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. The whole other side of life starts to open up. And you realize that everyone is here having their chosen experience. And this spectrum of beliefs that we operate in creates everything from suffering to bliss and everything in between. And we're all sort of moving between that all the time. And that creation of that experience is why we really come to physical, because that expands our consciousness. That's what life is really all about.
So you bring up two really good points that we have to talk about just to help all of us with this. One, you really point to, and it even comes up in the book, I believe. I'm sure I didn't make this up in my head, but we're essentially creating all the time. I mean, now how we're doing that can come into question, but creation is always happening, or attraction is always happening, whether we're doing it from a high vibration or a low vibration. But there comes in that component of, what is our state of being at any given time? And the reason I want to ask you about this and have you talk about it a bit, because you even mentioned in what you just said, we have these chosen experiences. And of course, a lot of people would argue, I wouldn't choose this life. What do you mean, David? I wouldn't choose whatever is going on with me today.
Or the people over there experiencing that horrible thing.
Right.
that and they get really angry about that. I deal with
Yes.
it every day on TikTok. I know.
Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about how our vibration and even our, our state of mind, like how those are interconnected and how that relates to what it is we come into alignment with?
Certainly. We talk a lot about universal laws, people in these circles, as you know.
Yeah.
Really, all universal law is the what I would call the law of conscious creation. We make up these terms, of course. Conscious creation means that all creation originates as thought, all of it. Everything is thought first. And obviously it is. I mean,
Right.
everything in this room that I'm sitting in right now, somebody thought of before it became physical, right?
Right.
Well, all creation is that. All creation is creation of consciousness. So if we realize that, then we can accept that, okay, if I really did fixate on believing that I had a Bentley, I'm just using this as a silly example, then
Yeah.
I would have had one a long time ago. It just became far less important for me in my life to have that thing. And so we start working on that, but then we tend to really hit a wall when we aren't able to manifest certain things that we really, really, really want. But if we become students of energy, we come to understand that really, really, really wanting something usually pushes it away. Because the real secret is the universe is always answering yes to us without judgment. We are judgmental beings. Our ego is a discerner of preference. When that gets amped up, it becomes judgment. This should be, this should not be.
Right.
But the universe doesn't behave like that. And we have zero evidence that it does because the universe is not fair. The universe isn't saying, Yolanda, you're a good person, so we're going to give you everything. And this person over here is not a good person, so we're going to punish them and they're going to have nothing. That's ego thinking. The universe is just delivering on a vibration because we did not come here from our eternal perspective to have a perfect experience. We came for the imperfection. Yes, we came because we understood that as beings of this earth environment, there are things that we're going to want to experience. Beautiful sunset. Birds chirping, the laughter of children, good food, sex. You know, there's all these things that we all can really appreciate and
Right.
agree that most of us appreciate and we want to experience. Those are the things that drive us through the experience. Those are the reasons that we live another day because there's enough going on that we want to experience that even if we're suffering somewhat, we still want to live another day.
Right.
I experienced someone in my home dying a couple of years ago. My partner's father, his parents lived with us at the end, and I watched his death process. And I watched that man who was completely bedridden, who couldn't even stand to have clothing on, and was so emaciated, you know, just not eating, not doing anything. But I saw him still find a little joy in watching old game shows. So for a while, he had the Game Show Network, and unfortunately, it was blasting through the whole house because it was so loud. And he would watch, you know, The Price is Right from the 1970s, and it brought him some joy. So he still had something, that spark of life in him that carried him a little further into his experience, even though there was probably more suffering than not at that point. I witnessed that, and I witnessed the divinity of that. And so when we get into this experience of life and the highs and lows, somehow we've gotten the notion that it's all supposed to be good. And then we get into law of attraction and we want to manifest everything that we want and we never want to have a problem again. And then we have some trouble manifesting something, usually because we want it too much, or we have a problem that shows up. Gosh, I'm doing my meditation, I'm doing all these things, and now I have this diagnosis out of nowhere. How in the hell did I manifest this? And then you get mad at yourself or you're mad at the universe. Not understanding that the universe is just answering yes. The universe is just delivering on our vibration. The other law is polarity, that we're polarized beings. Other than source, there are two sides to everything in our world. There's positive and negative. Yes, I could go buy a Bentley if I really wanted one. But guess what? There's going to be a huge price tag. There's going to be money that's not going to be investable supporting me because I allocated it toward a car. There's huge maintenance costs in that. I'm going to covet it so much that if it gets a scratch, it's probably going to upset me. You know, all of those, that's the downside to something like that in my silly example, that there's two sides to everything in our world, and there always will be. So there will always be suffering and there will always be joy, and there's always going to be everything in between. The way that we change the world is really changing ourselves and changing how we experience the world. And that doesn't just change, it's not just a selfish thing. It doesn't just change our experience, we are part of a collective consciousness, the collective consciousness of humanity. So if you think about every one of us are sort of this little light, and that entire grid of lights makes up all of humanity. Well, what is our light broadcasting? Are we broadcasting joy, love, and appreciation for all of humanity exactly as it is? Or are we telling the universe we cannot be happy until things external change or things in our lives change? I'll be happy when I get my Bentley. I'll be happy when I have a thinner body. I'll be happy when I'm in less pain. Well, the thing is that universal law works in reverse of humanity's law. Humanity's law is just a matrix of beliefs. We believe we have to get the thing and then we'll be happy. The universe is telling us, why don't you get happy? And then the thing will come with ease because you won't even need it so much anymore.
It's so interesting. So listen, you said so many things. I just have to backtrack a little bit.
I do apologize.
No, it's not that. I mean, it's all just good, you know, and I just want to make sure it's highlighted. I think, you know, it's very important to underline what you said, that the universe answers without judgment. I think that's a really good thing for us to sit with and consider. But also, you know, it's not that life is going to be without challenges, but it sounds like you're saying it's more so how we relate to the challenges, or how we show up, or how we perceive it, or how, again, like at the base of it all is our frequency, how it is that we are perceiving, there goes the mind, our thoughts first, and that generation of whatever it is that we are projecting is going to then assist how we show up and deal with whatever the challenges may be. You remind me of, I always think of how you could have two different people go through the same type of experience that we would say is horrific. And you have one person who totally goes into their anger, their upset, and perhaps will never let that go. And then on the other hand, the other person may take that as inspiration to come up with a cause or something to support other people that go through the same thing. You know, it's the same experience, but how we handle it is really up to us. It sounds like that's what you're saying. So this reminds me of, in your book, there was a quote, I believe, from The Stream, which I'll ask you about as well. All creation occurs via attraction, and all attraction is governed by polarity. So I want to ask you about this. We get it, David, our vibration is important, but what is that neutral state for us from your point of view? And then can you talk about that dance between the downward spiral and the upward spiral?
Certainly. We utilize what I call the virtual vibrational spiral as a training tool. Okay. And we've even given it numeric values. And a lot of spiritual teachings can be very complicated. I think sometimes people want things to be really complicated to give it power. Mm-hmm. And you hear about megahertz and all of these things. And I'm not saying those things aren't valuable and true, but for some people, it really shuts them down. Mm-hmm. So what I always want to do is take these huge topics and boil them down to the most simplistic explanation I can find. And TikTok is responding very well to that. So mm-hmm. I like that TikTok is really lighting up over that. So in doing that, I simply assigned the top of the spiral, which is pure joy, pure source, as a positive 20, and the bottom of the spiral, which is pure despair, void of source, almost completely void of source. I don't think we can ever be completely void of source. Source is in all things, but we're drowning out source as much as we possibly can when we're in pure despair, when we're ready to end it all, and that would be a negative 20. And the neutrality is in the middle. Well, we are vibrational beings, so we're mercurial. We're going up and down the spiral all the time, and we're aware of it because it is expressed in how we feel. It's our emotions. So there are days that we wake up that we just feel good for no particular reason. We're just up. And there are other days that we wake up and we feel down for some reason. And sometimes we don't even know why. Well, that's because of this vibrational flow that polarity creates. We are moving up and down this vibrational spiral all the time. Certainly, some of us are moving higher and lower more dramatically than others. And there's even disorders assigned to that. Bipolar disorder is an example of that. And I'm not a physician. I'm not diagnosing anything. I'm just saying that that's an example of that. But we all are. We know that we are because our mood is not the same all the time.
Right.
That's because this movement on the vibrational spiral is what's creating our lives. because we are moving toward and manifesting the things that we want when we're above neutral in our spiral, and we're moving away from that and we're manifesting our challenges when we're below neutral in our spiral. And I talk a lot about the matrix of beliefs that humanity has created. I'm not talking about a movie. I'm just talking about the total of all humanity, our average belief system, and where humanity is operating is really a little below neutral. We are very compliant beings when we're operating down, or in productive beings, when we're down around -5, just below that neutrality mark. We are worried about our credit score. We're worried about our income. We're worried about taxes. We're worried about, if you have kids, you're worried about them. You're worried about your health. You're worried about aging. We're in this constant state of worry. And why is that? Because we are fed that all day long. You need this product. You need this thing. If you don't have this thing, you're going to suffer. That's in almost all advertising. Look at social media, and it's gotten more polarized, it seems, since COVID. More political vitriol. My side is right. Your side is wrong. And we're battling. And if that other side wins, it's going to ruin your life. So that keeps us in this sort of dullness of -5. And we're very compliant. We're working jobs that we don't necessarily love. We're, paying for things and doing things, and we're doing our duty. And it's not all bad. I always say some of the matrix is good. I love that there are traffic laws. Mm-hmm. I love that when I get in my car and go out, even if I'm not at my spiral, I can set an intention to have a safe and stress-free commute, and it's going to happen. But I'm also relying on the traffic laws, because just because I'm in that space doesn't mean everyone else is.
Right.
But I find, Yolanda, when I set that intention and I get out and drive, I'm not witnessing a lot of craziness. But if I don't set that intention and I'm in a bad mood, that stuff is going to start populating around me really fast. It's like we're in a video game. It really is. The reality just starts to shift, and you start, and it's not that it wasn't there. It's just, what are you noticing in the vibrational state that you're in? If you're in a high vibrational state, you're going to notice, and we call it attraction, but really it's what you're noticing. You're choosing to notice the beauty in the world as you move through life when you've got your vibration above neutral. So we're not going to be static and in neutral all the time, but if you can move yourself from -5 to +5, you will dramatically change your life. And I'm talking about your aggregate vibration.
Right.
Every day you're somewhere different on that spiral, but what are you on average? And if you're experiencing anxiety, you're below neutral.
So there's something that I have to ask you about, and I'm so glad that you're mentioning what you say. A couple of things. One, I think a lot of what you're saying, again, is really emphasizing that not only we have the ability, but it's important to manage our own energy. And like we all know, we talk about how we are programmed by what it is that we give our attention to. Like if you are drowning yourself in anything, whether it's music, the social media, television shows, the nature of what you feed yourself is going to have an effect on how it is that you may feel or perceive, or all of these different aspects to our makeup, right? But there's also this idea of, people are afraid of bypassing their feelings, or, not wanting to bypass or pretend that you don't feel good or that you're upset or these types of things. And one of the words that you said really struck me, because I want to ask you about that, because some people will wonder, if something really does happen and it really does affect me in some way, or something is triggered in me, how do I still stay in the state or shift my state without causing like this backup that I haven't addressed? But the word that you said that really struck me was appreciation. And I have to tell you this, when you and I spoke a few days ago, you used that word. And then the following day, I had an opportunity to apply it. So, I think of how like a lot of times people say like, oh, you have to be grateful, just be in your gratitude, da da da. And sometimes you're like, F that. Like, no, I'm just not. No, I'm not grateful for X, Y, Z. So something happened that triggered me. And the first thing that came to mind is like, but can I appreciate looking at it from a different angle? Right. So I allowed myself to consider the other person's point of view and intention. And I could appreciate that. And I kind of had a laugh with myself of like, there's a subtle difference. I don't know. It seems like it's easier to appreciate in some way than to try to force on myself the idea of be grateful. Do you know what
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
yeah.
about.
So
I
could you
always,
talk about that? Yeah.
certainly, I always talk about, first of all, spirituality. I don't even really consider what I do spirituality, but that's our genre. People
Right.
that are into spirituality are going to be into what we do, so it's fine that we label ourselves that.
Yes.
But it's not, because a lot of spirituality tends to be that rainbows and unicorns and gratitude for everything. And there is some bypassing in that. And Taya is not about bypassing anything. It's, in fact,
Right.
Taya is about when there's something that triggers you, go up your spiral in appreciation of it. But once you go up your spiral, don't do what we all do and think, well, gosh, that really took me down. I feel better now. I want to forget all about that. I don't want to go back into that pain that I was just in a few moments ago or a few days ago or years ago or whatever it was. I don't want to go back there. So I'm going to ignore it and pretend like it didn't happen. And now I'm feeling better. I'm going to move forward. That is bypassing because it's still there. It still
Right.
exists. And whatever triggered you is still running in the back of your mind and your subconscious, waiting to trigger you again. And it is dragging your vibration down. It is one of the things that's taking you down to that -5 or even lower if you're there.
Right.
So what we do in the practice, and this is a huge secret that's buried in the book that I'm just going to give away, is we allow the thing to take us down. The gratitude is for the clarity. Because when you're down your spiral, you can't readily find gratitude, not authentically for things, because you're just a different being when you're down than you are when
Right.
you're up. So the first thing is, wow, this really took me down. Why? What's going on for me that this really took me down? I'm going to just appreciate that. And the second you start that light bulb of appreciation just for the clarity that something took you down, you're already moving up your spiral. So once you get yourself above neutral where you are feeling a little better, maybe you need to walk away from it for a moment, go take some deep breaths, clear your mind as much as possible. That allows source to just be realized. It's always there. Then look back at the trigger. Don't ignore it. Look back at it. What triggered me? What can I heal that is going on with me that created a trigger? The example that I love to use, and I think I told you this when we met the other day, the first time, the January 6th, a riot at the Capitol
Yes.
here in the United States. I'm sure you have a global audience, so you probably have heard of this, though, wherever you
Oh,
are.
yes. And I was
And it was
there.
in 2000, what year was that? 2022 that happened? Or
Yeah.
2020?
21 or 22. Yeah.
21. So this has been a couple of years ago now, but when that happened, for some reason, I really plugged into that. And I don't ignore the news. I don't live on the news, certainly, but I'll read an article. I have subscribed to the New York Times. I'll read something if it pops up and it's interesting. I don't feel like I have to ignore that stuff. So I knew that event was going on. I'm sitting on my phone at my desk, should have been working, but instead I was flipping between CNN and Fox News to get the two perspectives that we know we get. And it really took me down. And it's the first time I really plummeted and been triggered in a long time. I caught myself. I'm like, wait a minute, why am I sitting here going between these two places that I never visit and letting it trigger me? I put the phone down. I went and did a meditation. This clarity came over me that I still had this belief running in my belief system in justice. Like, oh, this justice, this is so unjust that that's our capital. And, I was raised in an era where that was sacred, right?
Right.
And that's it shouldn't be desecrated in that way, and this is not how our government works and all this stuff. So, wow, why do I need justice? I really need to think about that. Source is appreciation of all things. Source appreciates the people that are storming the Capitol and the people that are running and hiding and locking themselves in the basement. Source appreciates all my friends that are on Facebook freaking out about it. So if I appreciate all of it, why do I need justice? I detune justice in that moment. And moving forward, you know how heavily that's reported in our country. I never cared about it again. I didn't feel like I had a pony in the race. I wasn't triggered by it. I wasn't, oh, that person needs to be brought to justice and put it. No. It was just something that happened. So my mantra is, this is what we're doing now. And
Yeah.
I've applied that personally in my life since then, because in 2022, my home burned down. And when the house caught fire, I was the first one that discovered the fire, called 911, got everybody out of the house and did all of that. And I never once went to this shouldn't be happening. Because I had built this strong practice, it didn't take me down my spiral. I sat in my driveway trapped because the hoses were running behind our car we were trying to evacuate in, trapped with my two dogs and my partner. His mother had just been taken by ambulance to the ER. She lived in our casita, and watched our home that we had just spent a year remodeling being completely destroyed by fire. I didn't go down my spiral at all. It was, this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, I
it was authentic. It wasn't something I was pretending to do because I'm the dream of David. It was, it shocked me. Like,
well,
holy
that's
shit, this
what I
doesn't
want
take any time.
to talk to you about, because a lot of people may think, how would that be possible for me, right? And so there is effort. Like, we start from where we're at, but there is this process of, one, recognizing our own frequency and where we're at and how we feel and all of these things. But I want to talk to you about the detuning. The other thing I want to say, and I'm not going to say what the question is because you can get the book now, but I love the question that's recommended in the stopgap portion of the process. But with what you're saying, this brings up the really big question of, because a lot of times we do, and just to clarify, when I said I was there, I wasn't at the Capitol. I was just in DC. And so there was a lot.
Don't give yourself away.
Yeah.
You're not
alone. Yeah. No, that's, I wasn't there literally, but I was in DC at the time. But anyway, the attachment that we tend to have a lot of time to our upset, to our anger, right? It seems that we have this idea that if I'm not upset, I'm not letting you know that I disapprove, or if I'm not in my upset, then it must mean that I agree or I do approve with whatever it may be. I think we have a strange relationship to the idea of being neutral, and how dare us not show that we care or feel strongly about anything in particular, right? So I wanted to ask you a bit about the detuning our judgment, what that even means. But also, again, like, it makes me think of, but how do you want to feel? Like, do you, even if you're so upset and you're throwing your hands in the air, like, what is it doing other than upsetting your whole functionality? Like, what is that attachment that we have to this? Why is it challenging for people to say, I can soften, I can be neutral, I can be compassionate, I can understand? Do you have any thoughts around that? And can you talk more about detuning?
Sure. Well, detuning is important because we have spent a lifetime crafting our own belief systems, and we all operate in a belief system.
Right.
Even atheists that say they don't have a belief system are in some sort of belief system. Mm-hmm. I love watching Bill Maher. He claims he's a famous atheist.
Yeah.
But his belief system is heavily tied to politics. Obviously, there's a whole show about it. So that's his belief system. Politics, consumerism, the ego that's tied up in his fame. You know, that is his obvious belief system. And there's nothing wrong with that. So we all operate in a belief system. You're not going to get away from having some sort of belief system. And by the way, they're all made up. Because a belief system is just how we are perceiving. So you get to choose how you perceive. And even people that claim they have completely killed their ego and they're just beings of source, well, if you're still in a physical vehicle, a physical body, you have an ego. You have preference. You wouldn't be saying that if you didn't have a preference to communicate it. So right there shows that you have preference, right? So our ego is at its, what I would say, at its best. I know that sounds judgmental, but really the functionality of ego is to discern preference, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Our egos have been overdeveloped, and I say overdeveloped because we are suffering in our egos at this point, because the difference between preference and judgment, preference is I want to experience this, I would rather not experience that. Judgment is this should be and that should not be. That's a big difference. So if somebody believes that they're supposed to storm the Capitol and take the government over, if I said that should not be, well, that's that justice thing that I was suffering in. I was labeling, I was judging it. I was labeling it as should not be. When I meditated and detuned my ego in the moment, let's settle my ego down. My ego is a discerner of preference. My preference would be that didn't happen, but it did. So let's move on from that. Source perspective is they are doing in their belief system what they believe is right. And the people that are against it are believing what they believe is right. There's nothing wrong in any of it. This dance between should and should not be is creating expansion of consciousness for us as human beings. Our preferences do that as well. So having a preference and wanting to experience something and not necessarily manifesting it right away is the design of the universe, because that struggle, that suffering, that figuring it out, that expands our consciousness. That's the good stuff. That's why we come to physical reality, to expand our consciousness. And as expressions of source, we expand source consciousness in the process. The only way source can possibly expand, and even scientists say the universe is always expanding. Well, the universe is source. It's all the same thing. The only way anything that is an omniscient being could possibly expand its consciousness is creating a mechanism to separate from itself. And in that separation, create some need and some want and some desire. So every time we create something new, that new thought that originates that new creation is expansion of consciousness. Even if it's just improving upon something that already is, and we're always doing that with man-made materials and nature. Nature's always improving and getting better and becoming a better version of itself. We see it everywhere. So that discerner of preference is fantastic. The should not be is something that we've all been taught and we've developed in our belief system, and we can detune that. And I say detune because, again, we've spent a lifetime creating this. We're not going to just read a book and flip a switch and stop being that. It's momentum. There's momentum in this creation. It's an energy that we've created. Our ego, our inner voice, our inner critic. I call my inner critic Claude. I separate it from myself. I make it something that is outside of me. It doesn't even really chime in anymore, but for many, many years it did. I had a mother that I grew up with that always told me how unworthy I was and how useless I was. Mm-hmm. I created Claude from hearing that, right? You start to believe that stuff about yourself. And then suddenly that little voice, you know, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not this, you're not that. You're never going to achieve anything. One of my mother's favorite things she always told me is, you're dumb like I'm dumb. You know, until finally I said, you know what, you may be dumb, but I'm not. And that was a huge turning point for me. Right. But it took a lot of work to get to be able to get that clarity and say that. And I suffered along the way. But gosh, what a turning point. That's detuning, that linear time that we perceive where we are working on something. That expands our consciousness, the figuring it out, the crafting a solution. It's not all instantaneous. And so that time that we spend detuning is great for us. It's like the time that we spend in the gym getting our bodies physically back to where we want them to be, or to where we want them to be. The span of time is what creates the expansion of consciousness. So the detuning of the ego is a lifetime work if you choose to do it.
Right. Well, no, well, I'm actually glad that you said that it's a lifetime of work, because that's what I wanted to ask you about. I think a lot of times, and often I think it's just because we live in times now where everything is so readily accessible. We tend to lack a lot of patience now. We want everything now, including, you know, our clarity, including our awakening, whatever we think that may be. We expect everything to be now. And if it's not immediate, we jump into, we're either doing something wrong or it's not true. But you bring up a really good point around belief and that not being absolute. I mean, we've changed our minds about so many things in life, but there are these I don't know, maybe bigger beliefs or heavier beliefs, more anchored beliefs that we may take some time to undo or to allow ourselves to completely change our minds around, oftentimes because of fear of, you know, what will happen if I don't believe this anymore? Will I not be accepted if I don't believe this anymore? All of the reasons why we may potentially hang on to it. But I think it's important for us to know exactly what you said. It is a process. And even hearing you say all this, I hope for anyone who may be struggling with this in any way, that it's planting the seed of the possibility and the potential that this can be so, right? And so can you talk a little bit about what this process has been like for you? Like, even though you kind of had this knowing at a young age that if I perceive something as being so, it can be so. As an adult, let's say, while you're working with Source and you are learning even through them and developing the entire practice, do you still find yourself in this dance of a tug of war ever or your students, how do I fully allow myself to accept a new way of thinking, a new way of perceiving, a new way of being? And do you have any tips for how to start that?
So the most important thing is to have some sort of a practice, because if you just go, if you just read a book, or you go to a seminar, or you watch a YouTube video or something, and you hear a concept and you want to become that, usually it's not going to work, simply because we hear it, we're in a high vibration, we're experiencing something new, a light bulb goes off, we feel like, gosh, my whole life has changed in receiving this information. I'm going to do this forever now. And you do it for a few days, and then life starts to happen. You start right. to revert back to your old self, right?
Right.
The thing about the Taya practice is that we've created the spin outs as part of the practice, because really the spin outs have a lot of value. So when you fall off the wagon of your practice and you spin out and your house burns down, or you know something goes on that is really unexpected, and you find yourself back in the wilderness, realizing that we place ourselves back there because that journey back to clarity is where the growth occurs. And so what you do in Taya is you learn to really love the practice. It's fun. We've created this structure to where you can always get back to it. And you're going to move yourself out into the wilderness. You're going to fall off the wagon. That's part of it. And you're not trying to be perfect. And you really start to enjoy the process. Once you learn and trust the process, trust is huge, obviously. Right. Once you learn and trust the process, and it's not that hard to do. And the reason that we created the book the way that we did is it's almost like it's the Taya Bible, but no rules or worship.
Right,
right. It's meant to go, it's meant to be read through, but certainly go back to it again and again and again, because there's tons of tools in there and no one expects you to do all of it. There's just lots of different things in there that you can start to employ as you move through life with this practice, because you're going to spin out of it. You're going to falter. You're always going to be impacted by polarity. The good news is life gets better and better and better, and the practice gets easier and easier, and it becomes second nature.
Right.
It just takes time. It takes anywhere from, you know, several weeks to really start, you know, making it your nature, to months to even years. And if you, I'm not suggesting that you have to do this, but my podcast, The Stream of David, started in 2017. I started channeling. And then my intention with channeling was not to be the next Abraham. At that time, I found that everybody was doing the same thing. Everybody loved Abraham. I want to be the next Abraham. Well, my thinking was, well, we don't need to be the next Abraham. Abraham's great. Abraham does Abraham's thing. I love Esther Hicks. She made channeling not weird for me. And what is missing? What's the next thing? Because I found myself a little frustrated in that message, because it wasn't going too deep into polarity. It was just talking about manifesting stuff. And I realized that's perfect for what it is, but I need to disconnect from all of that. I need to channel my own thing. And the stream, which is my higher consciousness, said, don't worry about all that. Just channel, just teach. What's your intention? My intention was to create a practice where you can actually implement this stuff and make it your way of life. So the detuning is something you're doing all the time, and you're going to do it for the rest of your life, but it becomes second nature. You automatically go into that detuning. You automatically are aware of where your vibration is in the moment. And when you start being aware of where your vibration is in the moment and start taking some steps to allow it to naturally move up, not fighting and clawing your way up the spiral, that doesn't work, but just naturally letting it go up, your average vibration will just continually go up. What happens is you awaken. You have what people call a spiritual awakening, because you're now allowing more of what was already there all along, source, to be realized, because you're calming your ego down, which is the mechanism that is there to drown out source, but you're not drowning it out as much.
Right.
So you're moving through life, drowning it out less and less and less and less. More source flows, more clarity, more joy is a product of that. And then abundance is just whatever you want to experience does start to flow in, and you're not needing it as much. And that's the magic of all of this. And that's in loving the game and loving the process is vital to success. It isn't anything. If you don't love going to the gym and you can't tune in to love going to the gym, you're probably not going to keep going to the gym or doing a diet program or, you know, anything you want to do. If it becomes tedious and you allow yourself to quit because it became tedious, you mentioned the word work earlier. There's work.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. There is work in this. There is work and changing your vibration and detuning your ego. And it takes some discipline, but you see the value in it. And as soon as you see the value in it, you're probably going to come back to it.
Oh, 100%. And there's something else. There's two things that you mentioned. One, you've said it a couple of times, how as you start to shift and change your awareness, and as you allow yourself to perceive things, we'll say from a higher lens, right? More outside of the attachment and whatever we may consider low vibe for ourselves individually, there is more of a release from thinking you need so many things that you may perceive that you need now. And there may just naturally become this recognition of appreciating what already is. And in that appreciation, again, you start to, I mean, for lack of a better way to say it, like you match the vibration of higher experience simply because you are also in a state of less lack, fear, worry, these types of things. It sounds like, you know, that's essentially what you're saying. But I wanted to ask you about partners or friends and other people in our lives. And the reason is because in any type of energy work, it sounds like a lot of people will encounter, as they are shifting and changing, they may wish this for everyone around them, which can become a whole issue in of itself. But then there's also the side of, even if you're not attached to everyone around you coming along for the ride, there may then become this difference in you're no longer matching the frequencies that you used to. And so a lot of people struggle with this. So I wanted to ask you a bit about that and how you dance that dance.
It's a great question, because when you start doing this work, the landscape around you is going to shift, and that includes the landscape of friendships and relationships. And what I have found in teaching it to other people, one of the first things, we have a bootcamp program that people can come into and really work on this in a very intense, you know, control way with, you know, coaching and all that. And I, one of the things I tell them is, when you go, as you go through this program, some people are going to love the new version of you, the higher vibrational version of you. Some people in your life may not.
Right.
And we are not here to change other people. In fact, if we believe we have to change other people, that's a judgment in our ego that we are this way and now everyone needs to be like us.
Right.
This is all about appreciating people exactly as they are. In fact, you will detune in this practice, you will detune your transgressors, including the people that in your life that you disagree with, your coworkers, a spouse that you're not getting along with, a child that you don't understand. I've had all of it at this point come through there. And you appreciate them more. And it can change their behavior towards you, absolutely. But you can't control that, nor do you even want to in this practice, because it is about appreciation of all things. So you don't need anyone to change. But that doesn't mean that they aren't in a belief system where they preferred the lower vibrational version of you, and they are now challenged by the higher vibrational version of you, and maybe they can't even stand you anymore. I had a woman that went through, and she was really in a bad place when she came in. Really depressed, you know, almost ready to end it all, you know, that sort of thing. And as she went through, she really blossomed. Her testimonials just makes you cry every time you see it. And as she was nearing the end of her boot camp experience, her best friend broke up with her.
Wow.
She says, I can't even stand you anymore. You're so full of yourself now. And she was pretty upset by it. She says, I don't understand. She was always there for me when I was down. I said, yeah. She was always there for you because she loved that down version of you. She fed off of that energy of you were the wounded one. And honestly, it probably made her feel better about herself. Yeah. And now you're not giving her what she wants anymore, and she has no more use for you. She wants you to lower your vibration to make her happy. Is this really a friend you want in your life? And that was something for her that she had to let go of this friendship. And it helps to realize that everything in physical is temporary. This body that I'm in is temporary. Your body is temporary for you. I have a French bulldog that I love dearly. She's 8 years old. And I know that it's a temporary relationship. She's going to physically exit my world. And I don't know how I will deal with that. I adore her. But I know that. I've had pets that I've already had this experience with at this age, right? That there's a beginning, middle, and an end to everything. And it's very matrix, if you will, to believe that we have to grab hold of something and lock it down and hold on to it forever. Our romantic relationships, what are we taught in the matrix? Oh, it's supposed to be forever. Right. But over half the time, it's not. You know, your employment is supposed to be forever, but usually it's not. Your wealth, you've got to build wealth and create wealth, and it's got to be generational, and you got to pass it on to someone else. I have to tell you, the greatest gift that I have is that I have no one to pass my wealth on to. So I get to do whatever the hell I want with it, and whoever gets it at the end, I don't even care. My partner and I were having a discussion one day that we have all this stuff, and he's like, gosh, you know, we don't have any heirs. Who's going to get all of our stuff? And someone's just going to come in and throw all this stuff in a dumpster. And I said, well, who cares? This is an experience for us. None of this stuff is forever. It's all temporary. We can enjoy it while we're here. But once I'm gone, I don't care what happens to all the stuff.
Right.
And we're not going to care. You're not going to be in that space where that means anything to you, because that's all ego stuff. Everything is temporary. Everything is an experience that you move through, including your relationships. That could even be your family relationships. There are family members that I had to just appreciate from a distance. You know, my father, I had that relationship with my father. My mother disowned me the last 20 years of her life. She did not speak to me. And I never made amends with her at the end. I didn't feel the need to. My father just passed away last September. And he did not appreciate me. I was not the son that he wanted to have. I never was. And I was completely fine with it concluding that way. I didn't need to have this, you know, oh, we finally came together at the end. Healing was so wonderful and beautiful. And I wasn't even looking for that. Yeah. I just appreciated him the way that he was. I went to his funeral. I wasn't upset by his passing. I was in appreciation of his journey, appreciation of the fact that he did his job in bringing me into the world physically, which is really our parents' only job. Everything else is delivering, you know, contrast for us, if you will. And having had that experience, I've learned to really allow things to flow in and flow out. Material things, people, it's all just a temporary experience. But we're in this belief system that things have to be forever, but there's no forever in physical.
You just say so many things that I'm like, I wish we could touch on everything that comes out of your mouth, but we don't have the time. But I have to say this, like one, you bring up how a lot of people get so attached to the idea that they need closure, but really that is saying, I need you to agree or acknowledge me or be what I want you to be, or, you know, it's, I need you to satisfy something for me in order for me to say I'm okay. And a lot of what you're saying, you know, points to, again, like why even the attachment to your things, it just emphasizes again and again for me so much of your work of acknowledging what we're attaching to in thought, that we make a belief that really limits us and inhibits us in so many ways. It's almost like we don't even recognize it's doing the very opposite of what we think it's doing. So like a lot of people attach to things because they think it's a way of creating a healthy boundary, not realizing the way it's affecting their experience of life. And some of these things you could cling to forever, and the outcome isn't going to be what you want it to be anyway. So it's like, why prolong that suffering for yourself? That's one of the things that comes up with you say. But also the idea, to your point, that our relationships are supposed to be forever, your job, your career, you're supposed to, you know, knock it out the box until retirement. I think it's also an interesting way that we may see these things as failure versus evolution. We have this beautiful opportunity to keep evolving and having, you know, variation of experience in so many different areas of our life. But the other thing you said, it made me think of how not just we may see everyone and everything around us, we may label it as wounded, like, oh, the world is suffering. Oh, God, look at them. But we also have this idea that we are that. But there's also sometimes an attachment to that, like an attachment to the story that comes with our own suffering. Like, let's say, for example, someone did have a very challenging childhood and they've identified with that story as one who suffered as a child so much that it then expresses out in different areas of their life, their choice, their this, their that. And some people don't want to let it go because they want to be seen or known as whatever it is they've clung to for so long.
We celebrate victims in this society, and
right.
it's not helpful to people if they want to be more joyous beings,
yes,
to hold themselves in that victim space. But gosh, we love to talk about the victim stuff and the trauma and the toxic parent
right.
and the narcissism. Those three words, you hear those just all the time because we really fixate on that stuff. But if you want to be a joyous being, moving through a process of detuning your life's transgressors, there is nothing more powerful than doing that.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about that because as someone who has had challenges, like even in a young age and not necessarily having the ideal relationship with parents and the stories of what we say that should look like, right? All of the things that as a society we say we should be or life should be, you've had some experiences that say otherwise, right? As most of us have. So coming from you, was this something that you had to dance with? And then what did it do for you to be in that acceptance and appreciation for things that weren't what you thought you needed them to be? What did that do for you?
That did everything for me. One of the things that I love to talk about is the fact that, again, the universe works in reverse of the matrix. Mm-hmm. The matrix is your parents are supposed to love you and dote on you and do everything for you. And they're supposed to stay together. They're supposed to be a nuclear family. This is what it's supposed to look like. And you need to be born into a situation of privilege. And those are the lucky ones, right? You're born into having plenty of food and a warm bed and a caring mother and a loving father. And this is what it's supposed to be. The matrix just, you know, puts that out there for us. And we think, gosh, those are the lucky ones. Those are the people that are born into this relative ease. There's money there. They say, I had cousins like this. My extended family were all upper middle class people, and we were really, really poor. So it was a really interesting way to view the world because I was exposed to so much that wasn't really available to me as a kid. So I remember thinking, gosh, your life is so easy. It's assumed that you're going to graduate high school, you're going to go to college, you're going to get into the family business, and you're set for life. And I have cousins that have lived that. They're in their 50s and 60s today. They have never really had to work a day in their life, you know, built beautiful homes. They have, yeah, and they're not unhappy people.
Right.
But what I have found is there's also not a lot of depth there because they haven't been in the messiness. I love talking to people that have been through the messiness because they really expanded their consciousness. They've had to question everything. I really early on realized that being gay was one of the blessings of my life because it literally made me question everything. I was brought up in Louisiana in a Southern Baptist town where no one was openly gay.
Mm.
You'd be, you know, you would disappear if you were openly gay there. I'll just leave it at that. And so definitely I was brought up thinking and being taught that what I was wrong. And so I had that whole dance to do with myself and with what I thought God was at the time. Why did you create me this way if you don't want me to be this way? But yet I keep going back to this. And that's when the clarity came in from what I now call the stream. Who says I didn't do this? Don't pay attention to what they're saying. Pay attention to your own inner knowing.
Right.
The inner knowing is everything. The inner knowing is where it's at. Other people can inspire you toward, you know, thought and things like that. Taya is inspiring you to go inward. Not yes. to listen to Preacher David to tell you how to live your life, but to take these ideas and use them to go inward to your own version of the stream, which is source. That's your inner knowing. And your inner knowing is always going to tell you who and what you are is exactly what you came here to be. That these souls, if you think about it like this, the strands of consciousness that are seeking expansion of consciousness, which is why we all choose to come to physical. If you want to expand your consciousness, what better way to do that than to place yourself in the path of suffering right off the bat? And how often do we hear of these little kids, and this is a great example, these little kids that are born with a terminal illness, and they spend their whole lives in a hospital and they depart physical by 5 or 6. What does everyone say? They were a bright light. They were special. They were not of this world. I think that's an example. And the source has said this, that's an example of a strand of consciousness that is moving more into the core of source, that is seeking that suffering experience because they want to come and have that journey. And we don't understand it as human beings because we think long life is good, short life is bad. This is how it's supposed to be. But that's just all our human created judgment. There are environments where the more advanced beings of the environment do understand this on a higher level than we do. I think we're getting there. I think humanity is creating this hyperpolarity that we see right now. And as hyperpolarized as so much of humanity is, and as crazy as things seem to be getting with all this technology that we have, that's causing more of us to exit that matrix mentally and move more into a source consciousness way of life, which is what we're all doing here. And all of the messiness that I experience, if I had had great parents, I probably wouldn't be who I am today.
Right.
I am thinking on this level and teaching and sharing on this level because my father left when I was six and didn't really care for me. And my mother never wanted me and, you know, disowned me when I told her I was gay and, you know, had those experiences that you're not supposed to have. That stuff only drove me more inward. And I don't think I would have had that experience if I had had a different or had that this outcome if I had a different experience. So I'm very grateful for it. And the more grateful I am for it, the more I appreciate it, the more I receive in it.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two things. One, I want to get to, you know, your podcast and how everyone can connect with you, especially because I'm thinking, I wish I had more time with you. But the truth is, all of us listening can continue to learn from you and hear from you through other mediums aside from you being here. But I really want to ask you this, David. What is it that you hope people understand about this system at the forefront? Because, you know, of course, we could think, ooh, if I shift and change, you know, this is tied directly to my manifestation. And that may seem primary at first. But when you really go through this work, what do you feel becomes what is at the forefront? What is really primary or breaks through for people?
I have two answers. And the first thing I do want to say is that in all of this sharing, I am showing up for the people who are ready for this, who are at a place in their journey where they know there's another level. I think there's always another level. And, right. And perhaps this level is it for them. I am not trying to convert all of humanity to anything.
Yeah.
I don't think all of humanity is on the path for this. So this isn't about me preaching and sharing something that everyone must do. Mm-hmm. I am speaking directly, and you've seen my TikToks. I'm not worried about the people that don't get it. I just can't worry about them. I'm speaking directly to the people that do, and that seems to be working. So I think the most important takeaway is that when you speak of the basis of the practice being authentic appreciation of all things, and you're not here yet, it's okay that you're not here yet, because as we said earlier, the linear journey is everything. But if you're further back in your linear journey, wherever you are is perfect. And if you hear it and your ego is saying, oh, this isn't right because this guy's telling you to appreciate the war in Gaza and genocide and all of these things that, you know, these words that you hear every day right now, or, you know, someone suffering in some way. Appreciation is not celebration, and it's not even a preference. Appreciation is deeper understanding, so deep that you no longer need to judge it or fear it. Source is appreciation of all things. Source sees us as the eternal strands of consciousness that we are, here having a very temporary human experience that we perceive as linear, so that we can expand our consciousness in the having of the experience. So suffering is part of that expansion of consciousness. And we choose it through our judgment of what we're experiencing as should not be. And that's the light bulb. I have this experience. I've had my suffering experiences, right? The things that should create suffering and did for a while, chronic back pain for 30 years to the point of having to use a walker, home burning down, two divorces, weight gain, weight loss, getting in shape, getting out of shape, you know, all of those things, all of those human experiences I have experienced, and I have not stopped them from coming, but I have learned to authentically appreciate them as I'm moving through them. And they are an expansion of consciousness experience now, not a suffering experience. And that is available to everyone. It's about loving and appreciating exactly where you are, exactly as the world is. The world is not going to be made more perfect. That rainbow and fairy tale brand of spirituality that says we're going to birth a new earth and everything's perfect would mean that everybody has to dial into the exact same vibration. I don't see any evidence of that. I don't think that's the purpose of humanity. So the way to suffer less in your life is to change the way that you're experiencing it. And you have the power to do that. And this Taya is a set of tools that gives you to do that. It's not dogma. It's not the only way, but it's a way that seems very effective for those who give it power.
Yes. And I do want to say I have like 500 more questions just for what you just said, but I know
we can't do this again. I love
I would love,
obviously.
I would really love to because I still have things on the page. I'm like, gosh, I wish I could have asked him this, this, and this. So please do come back. But I want everyone who's watching the video to see the book. If you're not watching, it's called The Taya Practice. It's TYA. You can get this on Amazon. The book includes not just the teachings, it has exercises. There is a Q&A throughout every section with you. And I think her name is pronounced Katana.
Katarina.
Katarina, Katarina. And there are exercises, testimonials. There's so much good, juicy information to make it all very clear. And I really appreciate the Q&A because, you know, as a reader, of course, you're going to have those questions pop up for you. And then there you go with the questions and the answers. So also, you have a podcast. And as you mentioned, you are on TikTok. But your podcast is the stream. Is it the Stream of David?
Yes, the Stream of
The
David. It's the
Stream of
Stream of David
David.
just about everywhere. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. The podcast is the Stream of David. The stream is my stream of consciousness. It's my
Right.
source being that I have had coming my whole life. The only difference between me and a lot of other people is I just never shut it down, but I
Yes.
had to rely on it, is all I had as a child. And I kept it going. I have grown through it and moved through it. And then I taught myself to channel it. And so most of the book is channel writing. And now I'm very blended these days where the stream is flowing all the time. But for many, many years, I would go into trance, and I still do from time to time. People do love that Abraham Hicks experience where you can go into trance and they're talking directly to source. But source is flowing through all of us, and it flows through me in the teachings. That's why I don't rush to the channel part of it. The channel part is great, but even source says the channel part's great. You all have this. The juiciness here, as you say, is the Taya practice itself, because it's a set of tools and a belief system that you can choose, and it awakens you, and it will continue your awakening if you're already in that process.
Right. And speaking of that, because there is so much beautiful information with what you even shared here in this last hour, just curious, what can we hear on the podcast? So the Stream of David podcast, we can listen to that on all podcast platforms, but is this what you're talking about primarily, different aspects of this practice?
We are exploring di different aspects of the practice and the stream, and I do channel on the podcast from time to time. I have regular guests, and I invite new people on, like yourself, but I have regular guests, and it is focused on the stream's teachings and Taya. So I'm not bringing people in from the outside to kind of talk about their thing so
Right.
much, as we're really exploring what the stream is offering. But not everybody is a stream convert that comes on either. I will have people that I know that come in, and they want to get the stream's perspective on stuff. So we're like, why not do this on a podcast and share it for everyone instead of just making it a private conversation?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, and I know because I've been trying to write a book for years. It takes a lot of dedication to even do something like this. So genuinely, I appreciate your work. But thank you for sharing in all the ways that you do. So for everyone listening again, his name is David Strickel, and this book is The Taya Practice. You can learn more about David and his work at thestreamofdavid.com and check out the podcast, The Stream of David. Of course, we have the links for everything down in the show description. But thank you so much for coming to share all of this today.
Thank you for having me on. It was a lot of fun. You're really easy to talk to. You're a bright light. Your inquisitiveness, draws so much out of me, obviously.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back again, and we'll see you all very soon. Bye for now. Okay, beautiful alchemist. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with David. I want to thank you, David, again for coming to have the conversation with us. The name of the book again is The Taya Practice. That's TYA, The Taya Practice. And his podcast is called The Stream of David. You can learn more about David and his work at thestreamofdavid.com and the links to his website and all of this information, of course, is down in the show description. So I hope that you all are feeling inspired and curious and do your own explorations around all of this. Also, don't forget to go to my website, theenergeticalchemist.com, to learn more about me and my work. You can join me for an upcoming retreat and download the app while you're at it. Have a gorgeous day, beauties, and remember to always journey in love.